Wow, thanks, Sarah. I've never heard Sarah speak before. I say I'm blown away. I knew a little bit about the case, but it's amazing when you see somebody in person who's going through that sort of repressive response to political speech. It's outrageous. Our next speaker is one of our illustrious alum, Kianga Taylor, who's now a PhD candidate at Northwestern University, one of our proudest products of the university. And they are products, as our administration tells us. They are products. So. Welcome back, Kianga.
I actually want to talk about products, production. So just a couple of things. One is, I was, as Loretta said, I was a student here at Northeastern from 2006 to 2007. I transferred here into a returning adult program to finish my bachelor's, and then became very active on the campus. I was the president of the NEIU Socialist Club, and you know, we were involved in a range of political activities, the most central one at that time being anti-war activism. And as a result, you know, to my surprise, I had been out of school for a while, but the school I was at before was a city college in New York. You know, which had a long tradition of political atmosphere and a sort of, you know, combative relationship with the administration on campus, but, you know, a somewhat sort of hostile but mutual acceptance that we would both sort of coexist on campus. And at Northeastern, it was, you know, the administration was completely and utterly hostile to the presence of student activism, to the notion that students would actually, you know, not just challenge them, but challenge a sort of atmosphere of creeping corporatization and militarization to some extent on campus as well. And all of these things came to a head when two of our members, in concert with other students on campus, decided to leaflet the CIA coming to recruit on campus, you know, which we again found to be a hostile act in and of itself. They would have these job fairs in which, you know, they would invite members of Homeland Security, you know, the U.S. military, members of the U.S.'s secret police, the CIA and FBI, on a campus that had, you know, a huge number. I think it may be one of the largest number of undocumented students in the Midwest, at least, a huge Latino population. And for us, this, you know, this was an act of hostility. And so we organized with, you know, other students on campus to basically go leaflet the job fair. Like, you know, why is Northeastern engaged in inviting people like the CIA onto the campus? And while in the course of leafleting, literally one of our members was tackled by the police, another member was apprehended by the police. Loretta, who was the faculty advisor of our group, the three of them were threatened with arrest. The two members were actually arrested a few days later on a series of bogus and trumped up charges, which they then turned into in collusion, really, with the Student Government Association, really what can only be considered a witch hunt against our group on campus, where all of a sudden the Student Government Association, which had never had a student body meeting to discuss tuition hikes, which had never had a student body meeting to discuss any of, you know, the fact that graduating seniors couldn't get the classes that they needed because there was physically no space, that people, there were so many people in a classroom that it was exceeding the fire hazard limitations, so students couldn't actually physically get into the classrooms No meetings about any of this, but there was going to be a meeting to discuss whether or not the Socialist Club should be decertified on campus. And it was within this atmosphere that the free speech zone issue first came up. The phrase in and of itself, a free speech zone on a college campus, that there were only certain areas or certain one area in the entire university where there would be free speech allowed, a designated area. It was in the context of this political fight over whether or not students had the right to protest the presence of the military and its various apparatus on campus, and whether or not students also had the right to call into question anything that the administration was doing. And I think that, you know, that is just but one example. There are tons of examples from around the country of this sort of growing attack on the rights of students to organize freely, to speak out freely against any range of issues, whether it's budget cuts, whether it's justice for Palestine, whether it's against the war in Iraq, whether, you know, it is against the creeping privatization of public education, or whether, you know, there were a group of students at the Emory University outside of Atlanta yesterday for protesting for a living wage for food service workers. Food service workers on campus. And so this has to be seen, I think, in conjunction with what John was talking about as well, is this attack on academic freedom, the right of faculty members to speak freely in their classes, in their writings, outside of their classes, about their own political ideas and thoughts. And so the notion that Loretta, you know, is a government employee who works at a public university, you know, doesn't have the right to speak freely, I think all has to be seen within this context of what is happening to education in this country, and why is this happening, I think is an important point to bring up. I think some of the stuff that John raised is important in terms of this sort of Walmartization or corporatization of education. I think that is certainly a central aspect of that, and a central aspect of this. You have, in effect, university administrations, whether they be they public universities or private universities, essentially putting signs on the door that say open for business. And what does it mean to be open for business? It means a couple of things. It means smashing unions. It means driving down the wages and salaries, you know, not just of the most, you know, poorest and worst off employees, which they certainly do. I go to Northwestern University, which has the eighth largest endowment in the United States, United States universities, of $7 billion, has an operating budget of $1.8 billion, has a line item in the budget called Other, which is worth $150 million, but which has a service staff that works in the cafeterias and cleans the campuses, in which that is mostly Black and Latino and female, in which workers there, many of them receive food stamps, Medicaid, some of whom are homeless and live in their cars because that university cannot pay its service workers a living wage. There was just a conference about that on campus a couple of weeks ago. So this is happening, you know, in multiple places. But part of that drive is to lower the standard of living of everyone who is working on campus, except for the top. And I think that is one of the most interesting things about this, is the sort of mushrooming of administrators. What the hell is a provost?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And sure. What does a provost do? You know, the sort of mushrooming of these administrative positions and the bloatedness of their salaries. I was reading earlier about Grand Valley State, which is a public university in Michigan. Collectively, their administration makes $48 million a year, which is a 48% increase over the last 5 years. So while the rest of us on campuses are, you know, struggling to make ends meet, you know, et cetera, you have, you know, bloating salaries at the top. And while at the same time tuition continues to grow. In the last 10 years, from 2000 to 2010, on average, tuition at four-year in-state public institutions has gone up by 46%. And so you have tuition increases for us. At the same time, the salaries of faculty members have risen by 1.3%. But this is, you know, before the sort of context of Wisconsin, where now, you know, millionaires in the Congress and governors are trying to say that professors and faculty members who work in public universities make too much and have pensions, and all of that has to go. And so I think just to wrap this up, I think that this is part of a concerted effort to sort of restructure our whole concept of what education is, the whole notion that college is some place where you go to learn how to critically think and you go to have some sort of, you know, meaningful experience, is being replaced with the idea that college is somewhere where you go get a trade, you go get a skill, you learn how to take orders, and you like it, and then you leave. And if you think about the number, do people know the number, the percent of Americans who actually hold a four-year bachelor's degree? Yeah, it's like 17%, which is shocking. It's the United States, right? This is the light on the hill, the beacon for all of humanity, you know, the leader of the free world. No one gets a college degree in this country because it's too expensive and inaccessible. And so that, with rising tuition and the attack on the university itself, is making that is inaccessible to an even larger number of people. And so I think... just all of that is to say that I think is some of the context within which we have to understand where these attacks are coming from. It's not just a personality issue of, you know, this particular president is an asshole, even though that's often true, you know, or this body of administrators, you know, just don't get it. It is the logic of where education, both public and private, is headed in this country, which is in a corporate direction. And in order to make itself attractive to business, it must act as if it is a business. But saying that, I think it's also important to say that we can resist that, we can fight back against that by using our basic rights. We have a right to free speech, we have a right to assemble, and we should use that and challenge the attempts to constrict that, the attempts to tell us that we actually, you know, have free speech zones or don't have a right to organize and demonstrate, because the vast majority of students on campus reject that, and it's getting much harder for people to sort of separate, you know, a political consciousness from, well, I just want to go to class, I just want to get my education, when that is becoming increasingly more difficult for people to do because of the rising cost of education. For people who are active around these issues, we have to organize that, harness that, and build that into a movement that links faculty who are workers on campus, who are workers who are teaching, and with the service workers on campus as well. Because if they want to treat it like a business, then we have to as well, and shut it down as a way to exercise our power and attempt to assert some authority over this the institutions we go to educate ourselves in.